Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
I had to go about it, write it out, and find it myself. And there's some stories I can tell you.
Final word, World Cup Daily, day two. We're in Hyderabad for Pakistan and the Netherlands. I'm Adam Collins. I have Cam Ponsonby with me. We're here for Westfield London, Westfield Stratford City. More extra, less ordinary. Cam, take it away. 30-second summary.
Pakistan won to start at the end, but the Netherlands had a chance. Started Netherlands bowling first, got Pakistan down to 38 for three. And then Shaquille and Rizwan put on a fantastic 121-run partnership. That got broken, and then Pakistan kind of stumbled to about 282. In reply, the Netherlands got all the way to 120 for two, but put more time into the game, quality wins out. They didn't have the strength and batting to kind of survive a Harris Ralph onslaught. And it ended up with an 81-run win.
Yeah, it doesn't feel fair, does it, that the Netherlands had their chance here? It kind of at once felt like St. Patrick's Day 2007, where Ireland knocked off Pakistan in stunning circumstances. But at the same time, the golfing class, which you often see, don't you, in 50-over cricket compared to 20-over cricket. If this were a T20 international, the Netherlands are more than a puncher's chance of coming out on top. But with the extended game, 50 overs, it gives a chance for those high-profile, battle-hardened Pakistan players to turn the screws, and Harris Rauf did that at one stage. They took 3 for 13. Netherlands were, I wouldn't say cruising, but at 120 for 2, they were in a position where they were needing 7 and over, over a sort of a chaseable amount of time. Like, it didn't feel like they needed to go at 7s for too long. But yeah, 3 wickets, 2 of them in one Harris Rauf over. Could have been 3 and an over if not for a drop catch, and that turned the tide.
Yeah, I think we kind of disagree on this point, in that I feel like you think the Netherlands were more in the game than I do. I kind of, this game kind of went the way I was expecting from the off. It's exactly what you say. When it's T20, the volatility is high, anything can happen. Yeah, the Netherlands might have pinched a win. But even when they're 120 for two and they needed sevens, I was like, there's a reason Pakistan only got 280. There's a reason why they're finding it difficult. And it's one of those things where it's like, well, you know, we get to bowl as well. Like, we don't just have to struggle batting. And so when that run rate was going up, I just thought, would the Netherlands have the quality? If Colin Ackerman was looking like a really good spinner, which he is, but not that great, what's Shadab Khan going to be like on it?
Yeah, I suppose for me, it was more the fact that Vikramjit Singh was batting so delightfully. And Baz de Leeuw is the kind of guy who's got the Netherlands over the line in World Cup games before. We were down there in Geelong last year. He did it a couple of times in close chases, albeit smaller scores. They were going at sort of a runner ball on those occasions. But nevertheless, he's got that club in the bag to play clutch roles. And he's taken 4 wickets. He becomes the fourth associate. It's a bit of a niche stat, but I like it anyway. The fourth associate player take a 4 and a 50 in a World Cup game, which I think, and the first being Duncan Fletcher famously in 83 against Australia for Zimbabwe. But that performance from Baz de Leeuw, backing in what he did against Scotland to get them to the World Cup, 2 searing deliveries to knock over initially Rizwan, and I can't remember the second bowl where he picked up 2 wickets in an over twice, but still, they were balls nipping back off the seam, moving through the air at pace, and he whacks it. He hit Harris Rao for a massive 6 towards the end, just before he was bowled by Nawaz. That was probably the main moment, wasn't it? Because with the leader there, the Netherlands were always a chance.
So I feel like I need to get my head out of my arse a little bit about Baz the leader, because I used to never rate him, and I'm clearly wrong. I thought the stat you were going to go for, by the way, was Ben Gardner from Wisden's pointed out that no one for the Netherlands, only the leaders, apart from against Namibia, have taken 4 wicket hauls in the World Cup.
Yeah,
the last
works,
person
yep.
to do it against someone was his dad about 7,000 years ago or yep. something like this. But Baz the leader, I think I kind of look at him as two different players. With the ball, I consider him a bowler of great balls. Like, he had that double wicket over where it was like, oh my God, they're a real chance here at this moment. When he had that amazing delivery to get Rizwan, and then I think it was Ishtar that he got.
Wasn't it? The other one he knocked over.
Yes. Yeah. And then, but aside from that, he kind of bowls these like fast and loose deliveries. He's gone over a runner ball, but he's a wicket-taking attacking bowler. Mm. I kind of think if he was a batter in his current bowling form, he'd have the best cover drive in the world and average 15, because he just finds ways to muck up the rest of the time, but has that incredible thing in club in his bag, as you were saying earlier.
Yeah,
but with the bat though, like, serious cricketer, and he was the one player where I was like, that's the 7 and over didn't seem that intimidating. He played one incredible shot.
Straight drive?
I was actually going to go for the little clip over
mid
wicket.
It's outrageous.
I think it was Nawaz, and he's gone against the spin, he's got to the pitch of the ball, and he's just flicked it. And there's no way he's tried to hit it for 6, because mid wicket was in the ring. He was just trying to beat the fielder in the ring. And there was an amazing shot. It panned over to Vikram Singh, his mate, and just looking at him, kind of like purring at his mate, going like, that was seriously good, mate.
Yeah, there was two of them. As soon as Vikram Jit was out, he played a straight drive off Harris Rao the next over, which was, you know, the most classical shot of the day. But yeah, the time in the game when he played that, it showed the intent which they required to go at 7 from where they did. But yeah, not to be. And Harris Rao has that extra yard. They didn't really need to lean upon Shaheen Sharafreddy too often today, although he did take a wicket when he came back into the attack late. The fact that he had, I think it was 6 of the last 21 to send down, but might have been 6 of the last 20 Shaheen had. And yeah, we saw that a little bit with De Lida as well. De Lida only bowled 3 until the death overs, and bowled his last 7 or near enough to his last 7 off the reel. So maybe that's a pattern early in the tournament, that they're holding back the big gun seamers to bowl the toughest overs at the end.
I kind of saw that with Pakistan doing that when Netherlands were chasing, but actually more with the spin, in that Shadab Khan was the third spinner to bowl, and it was kind of like put time into the game and let that run rate build. I thought Shaheen, I think it would be very easy to look at Shaheen going wicketless for those first 4 overs at the top and kind of go, oh, has he not started the tournament very well? I actually thought he bowled perfectly fine. Singh missed 3 of the first 4 balls he bowled. Singh's an incredibly elegant player in isolation. He doesn't move his feet at all. And so when everything works, like, it's beautiful, it's incredible, stick it on your bedroom wall. And then when it doesn't work, he's kind of, well, he's not moved anywhere, so it looks ridiculous kind of thing. And so I think Shaheen has started fine. It's not a kind of case to be worried about for Pakistan at all. And he's obviously has so much more importance on his role, as well as Harris Rao and Hasan Ali, with the absence of Nazim Shah.
We saw Vikram play 2 glorious shots off Shaheen behind point in the power play, which might speak to your point that, you know, he's not moving his feet, he's reaching it a fraction later, and thus he's skewering it through that gap where there often will be early in a one-day international. Going back to Pakistan's innings, so Rizwan and Saul Chakil put on 120. At one stage, Pakistan are in strife early on too. They're 38 for 3 when Imam is out. Before that, Babar Azam gives a catch to mid-wicket. One of several bowling changes that Scott Edwards made immediately brought a wicket. I think 4 times through the course of the 50 overs, he made a change and it immediately brought a wicket for the Dutch. And, you know, they said this on the coverage, that he seemed like he was one step ahead. And I might rant a bit more about this in the in the Hall of Fame. You know, fuck it, I'll do it now. You know, there's been a lot made of whether there's space for bilateral one-day cricket in the future, and I understand and respect where it's coming from. There is an important period of time coming up with Test cricket. Where do we find room for enough Test cricket being played across enough nations for it to remain credible and authentic and so on? And thus, one-day cricket seems to be the format getting squeezed. But how have Netherlands reached a point where they're pushing Pakistan? And I reckon they'll push a lot of teams through this comp. They've kept at least three full members out of this tournament who they've beaten in the qualification in Zimbabwe back in July. It's by being in the World Cup Super League. They played 24 one-dayers over the last 3 years against other full member nations. They've got that bulk load of cricket in, which means a captain like Scott Edwards isn't walking into a tournament intimidated in the way that, say, Tim De Leeuw would have when he rocked up in 1996 when they were clearly a mismatch, or 2003, which was the last time before 2011 where they played in a World Cup. That felt like they were always going to be rolled eventually by the bigger nations. That imbalance doesn't feel quite as acute because they've played so much one-day cricket. So it isn't, I don't think, a one-size-fits-all when it comes to how much bilateral one-day cricket there will be into the future.
I think this match was probably a really good insight in the kind of the improvement, progression of associate, for want of the literal word, but also still the gap between the two nations. And that was saying, like, it was a competition, it was a proper contest. That was not a match that Pakistan are going to go home from tonight and go, God, we rolled them over. And it's not going to be a case that everyone's going to rock up to the Netherlands game and be like, this is our banker, we're going to just turn up, win.
Right.
But at the same time, as we referred to before, like, the more time that was put into the game, the more it was a case of, I think Harris Ralph bowls 90 miles an hour, so he's going to get a lot of people for second ball ducks. And it was Scott Edwards on this occasion. But just to have that quality, that was a real kind of snapshot of the difference in ability, where it was a case of, this guy bowls 90, someone's coming at number six or seven. I think I actually messaged you and it was the fifth wicket down. I went, game over, done. Yeah, like, that is the point where you need the kind of smaller nations need their kind of big guns to put in the incredible individual performances to kind of make up that difference in quality.
Pakistan found themselves in deep net run rate trouble 4 years ago. They lost heavily to the Windies and they ended up missing out on the semi on the basis of that tie-breaking mechanism to New Zealand, I think it was, from memory, who finished in fourth spot in the group stage. This time around, Pakistan have started off by, you know, they're 0.7 in the black. Interesting, though, that like the Netherlands are at negative 0.7, England negative 2.1. I'll never thoroughly understand net run rate, but it does feel a bit stiff that England have now got a net run rate that's 2.5 times worse than the Netherlands on a result that's broadly the same. I know that New Zealand got there, you know, in style yesterday, and I get that wickets lost play a role in all of this, but the Dutch were still bowled out in 41 overs.
Yeah, I'm really sad you've asked me to explain net run rate stuff, because I'm really going to struggle. But I think England should have like a minus a million net run rate. It was the biggest thumping in history, as far as I could tell, and I decided. And again, it was a bit weird. Like, the result flashed up on the screen at the end. And you've sat through this match of a good cricket match, a good competitive cricket match.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden it goes, Netherlands lose by 81 runs, having been bowled out in 41 overs. You're kind of like, what? Like, it feels like it's a football match that someone's won 3-1 or 4-1, but like goals 3 and 4 have come in injury time. You go, no, that was a competitive fixture.
Right.
And the scoreline doesn't quite reflect kind of how close it was throughout the kind of length of time it was.
It's the 1966 World Cup final is what you're
absolutely
saying.
Absolutely.
With the goals
I think of that all the time.
Hassan Ali, first one dayer for a year. Did he bowl, was it 20 of his first 24 balls with dots? A couple of extras in there too, but a couple of wickets, one early, with a short ball that I don't think O'Dowd was expecting, but there were four dots that immediately came before the bouncer. Yeah. And Hassan Ali's always been just a snifter quicker than people give him credit for, because he's relatively short and he bustles in and so on. People don't think he's got wheels, but he always has. And then he got one late as well. He was brought back into the attack and took a wicket straight away. So I know they've not gotten the seam Shah, but quite useful having a guy who's played so much cricket slot back in to share the new ball with Shaheen Shah Afridi.
He's got incredible posture in his run-up. He's got the straightest back I've ever seen. He was getting a really hard gig when from the commentary on broadcast. They're going like, oh, we're not used to our bowlers bowling 130. We like him a bit quicker normally. It sounds better. It looks different. I was like, man's representing his country in the World Cup. But no, it was. I thought it was a really good example of... So we're only two games in, but a kind of a sense of... And I'm really reluctant to make too much of a sweeping statement about the conditions being played in, because one of the big kind of people who know what they're talking about when they refer to India, they kind of refer to it as like a continent, as it were. So it's like you can play different parts of the nation. I like playing in different continents normally, like Dharamsala is going to be very different to Hyderabad, for instance.
Right.
But for both these games, for today and yesterday, there's been opening bowlers and spinners have been able to get the ball to hold in the wickets in a way where it's been incredibly difficult for teams to rotate the strike. So Singh was kind of pretty much boom or bust, beautiful cover drives or dots. And it was the same with Hassan Ali at the other end. He was just bowling dot balls on occasion. I think it was Ackerman managed to squeeze a couple through the offside. But it was that kind of, whether that actually is a reflection that, yes, Hassan Ali's having to replace Nazim Shah, and that's a huge kind of set of boots to fill. But actually, is that style of bowler going to be very favourable throughout the tournament? And have Pakistan almost, through loss of a superstar, kind of got the kind of wily old clubby that actually kind of sometimes gets even more wickets?
Yeah, the one that looks like a wily old clubby for Pakistan is Mohammad Nawaz, but he gets the key wicket at Dalida that spins past the edge and hits the off stump. Cops a little kiss on the cheek from Imam Al-Haq for his trouble there to Mohammad Nawaz. There is still work to be done. Like, I'm not entirely sure and convinced that Iftikhar plus Nawaz plus Shadab. Shadab doesn't feel as potent as he used to be. This got raised on television a little bit too, that there have been some adjustments maybe. But still, they've got to find 20 overs out of those three at the moment. Fakhar Zaman's out of form, but they'll presumably stick with him on the basis that he's a match winner and they're not going to punt him early in the tournament, having still had a convincing win. So, you know, there is room for growth for Pakistan, who, we'll go through it, who they play next. They've got Sri Lanka on Tuesday. They stay in Hyderabad. Then they've got India, which is their third game at Ahmedabad, which is the blockbuster. So you would think from here for Pakistan, they need a really strong performance against Sri Lanka to build to where they might be to knock off India a couple of days after that.
Just to go back to your point about that kind of trio of spinners, I just have a kind of a great emotional attachment to all kind of second string off spinners, basically. But I feel like it's going to be the tournament of the second spinner, because you're getting a bit more purchase in India. You're going to have to bowl and teams have to attack you. And so we saw it yesterday of Glenn Phillips getting those two vital wickets against England, Moeen Ali trying to force a pull shot, Joe Root going on the sweep. We saw it today with Akram getting out first ball to Iftikhar, trying to force the issue. And it was a mate on commentary, Shane Watson, was just kind of bereft. He was like, just stand there. Just stand there and whack it straight. And because I still have access to the CricViz stuff, I don't know if I will use it anyway. Contractual problems.
It's fine. I was hitting up Ben Jones, who will host this show occasionally from India through the tournament, saying, where's the WinViz thing on the app? He's like, I'll get it put on there. But I know WinViz is certainly part of the tournament. Just to segue before you finish your point, I reckon WinViz would have had the Netherlands in front when Dalida was betting with Vikram, just at that particular point, maybe not quite in front. They would have had at least a four in front of it.
It's like, the numbers, wasn't, not the gut, though, is it?
No, yeah, sure. I'm just saying they weren't that far away. Anyway, continue.
But I looked up to see Shane Watson, like, how often he swept in like ODI cricket, and he just didn't. He just like never, ever swept. Because he was saying what he said on commentary. He was like, stand there and whack it straight. Like, what's the problem? And you're kind of like, well, other players, you were really good at that, Shane. Other people are good at other things.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think Pakistan's little spin trio there, they've got all three. They've got left arm, right arm, leg spinner. I think that'll be fine. I think that'll work. And I think you'll see, even though Shadab Khan's been struggling of late, so he might be having a bit more of a difficult time, he'll still get that respect that the premier spinner will get. And as a result, we'll see Iftikhar and Mohammad Nawaz maybe taking more wickets than you'd otherwise expect.
And final word on the Dutch. I mean, they used eight bowlers. They did a great job with the ball. And Pakistan were lucky to get 286 based on a 19-run stand for the final wicket. I know they've got potentially an injury concern with Logan van Beek, but time will tell there. Their next encounter is on Monday. They're also staying in Hyderabad, where they play New Zealand, who are in red-hot form after their win over England on day one.
It's basically New Zealand v New Zealand Day, that. That'd be great.
There is a bit of that, isn't there? Yeah. There are quite a few New Zealand players. All right, time for us to move into the Final Word Hall of Fame. Final Word Hall of Fame throughout the course of this 2023 World Cup is brought to you by Westfield London and Westfield Stratford City. The best place to celebrate cricket as a sport. No better place than as I stumble over my lines. As I stumble over my lines on day two.
It's so exciting.
Celebrate today's trends as a shopping concept. Nowhere better than Westfield London this weekend. I think from memory, as Jeff said yesterday, that was a little play on words for some dodgy copy that we received from the ICC a couple of weeks ago in a media release. The point stands. Look Laundrette between the 6th and the 8th of October. It's the 6th today, so over the weekend. See how the future of fashion is being influenced by style from around the world and the changing world around us. Free workshops for all ages on fashion, sustainability and exercise across the weekend, and tune in live at 7 p.m, which was yesterday, so I won't keep saying that. Believe me though, Westfield London, Westfield Stratford City, more extra, less ordinary. We'll be
great
talking
place.
A lot more about them and all the various things, because they are fully committed to cricket, which is why they're with us for this World Cup. Cam, what stood out to you today? What was the most final word moment of the day in your eyes?
I'll let you take the best one, so I'll start with the worst one. the second one. It was Singh putting a massive dive to reach the non-striker's end, and the fielder just did not have the ball in his hands at all. It was completely unnecessary. He got the Superman out and kind of looked up a bit sheepishly, kind of like, didn't really need to do that. But it looked great. 10 out of 10.
Do we know why I did it? Like, again, even now, I don't think...
I think he thought it had been cleanly gathered. Right. But then, but also, you can literally see him look at the fielder, yeah, who doesn't have the ball anymore. And he got himself nice and dirty for his troubles.
I think Shane Watson has a real future ahead of him as a Tony Gregg pitch reporter.
When
I was growing up, big, tall, former, blonde, all-rounder, Tony Gregg would get down low and touch the surface and be at one with the grass. Well, Watto was knocking the pitch. Perfect. Today, which that's the technique. He needs the car key though. He needs Shane Watson with the car key before the next game. I would go as far to say one of the things that brought Jeff and me together was our riding on Watto when we Lovely. Were both, jobbing freelancers, trying to get work where we could. We both had a lot of words about Shane Watson when we were younger. And I'm glad we can talk about him throughout the course of this World Cup. We still never had him on the podcast.
Is that a point of pain for both of you?
We really want to do it. Yeah. I don't know why we've never been able to nail that. Anyway, the pronunciation of Baz De Leeuw. Now, I'm going with Baz De Leeuw because it was always Tim De Leeuw.
Yeah.
And I do the fair break where Babette De Leeuw plays, their cousins. It's De Leeuw. We're cool with that, right? I think we accept there's no other. There's two variants on it, though. I really love. So Dirkie Nannis, who played for the Dutch side, I love the fact he's not going with Baz, he's going with Boz.
Boz, yeah.
Boz. Like a DJ at a German trance club, Boz De Leeuw. And I'm tipping Dirk would have done his homework. So it probably is Buzz.
Yeah.
What it almost certainly isn't is what Ramiz Raja was identifying him as, which was Baz De Leeuw.
Baz De Leeuw.
Pretty confident it's not Baz De Leeuw. I stand to be corrected. And I like Ramiz a lot. It's not personal. Yep. And I'm reluctant to bag commentators for pronunciation because God knows I've made some howlers in my time on air. But we're early in the tournament. Room for improvement, Cam.
Maybe Dirk has the first name right and Ramiz has the second name right and everyone's been getting it wrong. It's Buzz De Leeuw.
I think could be. I think yep. Buzz De Leeuw. I wouldn't be surprised if that's where we land in a couple of games' time.
We've got to have a word for the De Leeuw's wink, though, to Harris Ralph.
Good.
Hooking away the ball over for six. And these two have history in that Harris Ralph hit De Leeuw during the T20 World Cup last year. De Leeuw got an amazing cut across his cheek from where the grill went in. Big black eye.
It's like a 20-minute delay, wasn't there? It was a really brutal whack.
It wasn't nice, yeah. And I think Harris Ralph gave him some inspirational words like, you'll come back stronger from this, which is so rude whilst being mean. Just like, it's like, don't worry, mate. One day you'll be good enough to play me. It's fine. And then this time around, gets the big hook shot out. Flashes him a little wink, and I think they're all friends.
Yeah, I mentioned before that when De Leeuw was dismissed, that Imam kissed Nawaz. How about the TV graphics being broken for a time, and then they turned to the old handrail scoreboard at Hyderabad? They showed that
Wonderful.
Between overs, which more of, please. Even if they've got the graphics, I love
that's very
the old
word.
Scoreboards. Yeah. And just a note for Katie Martin. What a gun she is. Katie Martin, who always enjoyed her being mic'd up when wicket-keeping for New Zealand.
Yeah.
She made some great points on commentary today that no one else was making. She's clearly doing her work, especially one around the boundary rope.
Boundary rope, yeah.
I thought that was spot on. Like, the boundary rope...
Let's do another 20 minutes
on
the boundary
rope. So the boundary rope, which was pushed back about 2 feet beyond where it should have been with the sponge, but the line's already marked in. She found out what the actual boundary line should be. That's always a slight point of contention, especially in club cricket. It was one of the one percenters thing. If you're thinking hard about it, you should be making that adjustment as a fielding side so you don't get caught out.
Because I didn't know that. I always thought it was kind of something that a lot of cricketers do. You kind of move it back a yard, but then because obviously it's a professional ground, there's the mark left over. And to be honest, I was so relieved it didn't come into play, because if we'd got a situation where it was 3-1 off the last ball and a fielder fields the ball just inside the boundary but over the line and it goes, actually, that's 4 runs, that'd have made me really sad. It's a bit much for me, that.
It gives me a chance for a segue in saying that story time, our history show comes out tomorrow. About 6 months ago, we told the story of where there were two ropes laid next to each other, a one-dayer between New Zealand and South Africa at the Gabba in 97. The ball landed right between them.
Oh.
What do you do there?
I think that's six.
I think that's six even.
I think from memory, it ended up as a 4 and the game was resolved by 1 run. That's my recollection. Although
that's
maybe
that
it was 6. We certainly told the story.
It's got to be 6 because you've gone past the first rope. That's the point. But that is the boundary.
What is the real quiz? Who's to know? Story time out tomorrow, because tomorrow's a Saturday. Jeff and I recorded that before he jumped on a plane. Two games tomorrow. I'll have Vatush and Ahanta Raja with me doing the first one, which is between Bangladesh and Afghanistan. We're up north in Dharamshala. Talk about a different country. The difference there between the air quality in Dharamshala versus the second game where South Africa are playing Sri Lanka at Delhi. So they can look forward to that. Cam, been great having you with us.
Thank you very much.
One of our London co-hosts through the course of the tournament. We'll be here every single day for Westfield London, Westfield Stratford City, more extra, less ordinary. If you like what we're doing, subscribe, follow us on Patreon, do all the things you would normally do. Share the podcast, follow us on social media. Every ep will be on YouTube as well. Pakistan off the mark with a handsome win by 81 runs over the Netherlands. Chat tomorrow. Protected, brother, I ain't fenced in. If my future questions, my current senses, that'd be the same we've been doing for centuries. Sorry if I ran out to empty, wrote this so you know what I meant here. I had to go about it.